The General Mills Radio Adventure Theater. I'm Tom Bosley. Turn your switch and wherever you want to be, tomorrow, today, or yesterday, the adventure is there on your radio. 50 years ago, an unknown aviator came out of the West on the wings of an aeroplane, breaking records all the way from California to New York. Then a week later, accomplished the greatest adventure of the century, flying New York to Paris solo, nonstop. His name was Charles A. Lindbergh. He was 25 years old, a reserve officer in the Missouri National Guard, flight commander of the 100th Observation Squadron, chief airmail pilot, an aviator who really knew what he was doing. Just the same, people called him Lucky Lindbergh. Our adventure, Then They Called Him Lucky, was written especially for the General Mills Radio Adventure Theater by G. Frederick Lewis and stars Russell Horton. I'll be back shortly with Act One. Today's story will try to get as close to the truth as is possible 50 years later. We do have public records and newspapers from everywhere. Lindbergh's one-man, one-engine, one-wing flight across 3,600 miles of unflown ocean has been written about. The American ambassador in Paris, who met Lucky when he got there, likened him to three other young and idealistic heroes: Joan of Arc, Lafayette, and the shepherd boy David, who in 5 minutes with a slingshot achieved a place in history.
Well, come in, Slim. Hey, did you have a nice Christmas?
Christmas? What's that?
Well, that was 2 days ago.
Oh, Christmas, yes. Well, Bill, I was flying your mail route from Chicago to St. Louis and forgot to take the day off.
Oh, come on. I would have let my chief pilot off. Now, what is it? Don't you believe in Santa Claus?
Well, I'm glad you asked that, Bill. I'd like to believe in Santa Claus, and that's why I'm here. You know, there's a $25,000 prize offered for whoever makes a New York to Paris flight, and, well, I'd like to try it. I think I could make it.
I think you could, too.
Well, thanks, Bill. I know exactly the kind of plane I want to use.
What kind?
Single engine. Wright Blanca would be best, but I know a Blanca's out of the question, too much money. So, I'll find some single wing.
One engine across the Atlantic? Well, wouldn't three be better?
Well, if you cut down all unnecessary weight, you don't need extra engines. Most of your weight is fuel.
Mm-hmm. So this is where Santa Claus comes in. Money, right?
Well, I was hoping that's where you and Frank would come in. See, I feel that St. Louis is not only the geographical center of America, there's no reason why it shouldn't be the center of aviation. So, if St. Louis could back this flight...
There are a couple of rich gents who might come in with us. Hey, how much do you think you need?
I figure $15,000. I've got $2,000 of my own. I'll put that in the pot.
Only 15? Oh, Charlie, my boy. If you can get an airplane and a right engine to your specs and fuel it and test it and fly it for that little, I'd say that's as big an accomplishment as landing in Paris.
Don, did you see this telegram?
Hmm?
Can we build a plane for a non-stop flight between New York and Paris, state cost and delivery?
Who's Robertson Aircraft?
That's the Robertson brothers, Frank and Major William B., Bill. They've got the mail contract between St. Louis and Chicago.
Oh, it must be the Ortigue $25,000 prize. Well, can we?
Well, of course we can. It'd be great for us here at Ryan. Put our planes on the map.
Well, you're a plane designer, Don. What'll we answer?
Tell them Ryan can build. We'll make them one similar to our M1 with larger wings.
And cost? What'll we quote them?
Say about $6,000 without motor and instruments.
Uh-huh. Delivery?
Say 90 days. Captain Lindbergh, this is B.F. Mahoney, our guiding spirit. He just bought Ryan.
Pleased to meet you.
Well, B.F., we just made the grand tour of the plant.
Seen everything now, eh?
Uh-huh. Sir, can we get down to business?
Sure.
Okay, you quoted me $6,000 without engine. How much with?
Depends. You want a Wright, a J4 or a J5. Let me put down some figures.
Those new J5s average 9,000 hours to a failure. It's hard to beat that.
Okay. Agreed, Captain. Metal propeller?
Oh, yeah. Now, about instruments. Certainly an earth inductor compass.
All right.
Captain, we'll go along with you for everything you need. Frankly, building this plane for your nonstop New York-Paris flight is very important to us. We're a growing concern, and, well, we want to be part of something like this.
I need all the tanks for fuel up front and in the wings that you can think up.
Now, don't worry, Captain. If you want it, Don here can design it, and Ryan can build it. We want this job.
Now, I'll plan to stay out here till she's built and tested. But the big thing is, do you folks think you can cut down on building time from 3 months to two?
Cut construction time? Don?
Why not? Speaking for all the other guys who'll be working in the factory on her, I'd say, who needs all that sleep?
Mr. Hall, I'm from the San Diego Press. Now, for over a month, this job has been so hush-hush, my editor sent me out. Well, if there's anything you could tell our readers about Mr. Lindbergh's plane...
First of all, he's a captain. Get that straight. Not a mister. Secondly, no. Nothing on the plane yet.
Oh, excuse me. Captain Lindbergh, right. Now, we got word from St. Louis that he's in some sort of special training.
Yes. You can say he's in training, the way a boxer trains for a prize fight. But his training is to defeat the Sandman.
Defeat the Sandman. Hey, that's good.
Several times he's gone without sleep from 36 to 40 hours.
36 to 40. Well, I guess that's how long he figures he'll have to stay awake when he's flying to Paris.
You'll have to excuse me. I'm wanted. I'll have one of the boys take you out the gate. Sam, make sure this gentleman gets out. And make sure the gate's locked when he's outside.
Don, here's a wire from the Department of Commerce. Our license number is N-X-200. How do you think that'll look on the tail?
N-X. Never heard of that one before.
Well, N, you know, the international code for U.S. planes flying abroad.
Uh-huh.
And X is for experimental.
What were the designations of the other contenders? Bird, Davis, Funk. Can you remember?
I try not to think of them. The Sikorsky, the Belanca, the Fokker all crashing, and the lives lost.
Uh-huh, and we know why.
Yeah. Always carrying too much weight.
The Ryan will make it. Don't you worry.
Matter of fact, I am worried, Don. About something else.
Charlie, you gave us one heck of a deadline. 60 days. 90 was tight.
Well, if I could have stretched it, I would. But the good weather will hold only so long. Don, I'm trying not to have nightmares about wings icing up.
Nightmares? When do you sleep? Look, I aim to make this plane the safest baby that ever took off. Now, that takes time. I've gotten to like you, Charlie, in the last month and a half. And I don't plan to see your name on a list of casualties. Ready for your test flight, Charlie?
Ready. Switch off. Throttle closed.
Contact.
Contact.
800 RPM. Oil and fuel normal. Temperature rising. Throttle slowly. 1,000. 1,400. Wide open. Left magneto. Right mag.
See, that's a beautiful ship.
She's got a name now, besides the Ryan New York Paris. The backers in St. Louis decided.
Look at that Lindbergh go.
Yeah.
careful and sure.
They're calling the plane the Spirit of St. Louis.
That's a good name. Mm-hmm. Good name. I might have chosen something different.
Different? Like what?
I would have called her the Spirit of Tomorrow.
Gee, Mr. Hall, it's great of you to let me interview you for a second time.
I like what you wrote. One of the few stories Charlie approved of. So I thought you'd like another crack.
Well, I didn't know the captain read papers.
When they print nonsense, he gets angry. But he's a very quiet man, as a rule.
Hey, is that him way up there?
Uh-huh. Been testing almost every day. These are the final speed and load tests.
Oh, look at him go. Oh, it's worth all the hours you put in, isn't it?
I was just figuring. So far, I put in 700 hours.
Oh, well, forgive my ignorance, Mr. Hall, but doing what?
Design, weight and balance analysis, stress analysis, then, of course, the actual drawings, and performance analysis from the data sheets he brings in. You call that flight test engineering.
Who else here at Ryan has been putting in the overtime?
Well, who hasn't? Even our purchasing agent and the factory manager were on deck laying out the fuel and oil system and construction and assembly at least 3,000 hours. Huh? He's leaving any day now for St. Louis, then New York, nonstop, both hops.
Well, what's the deciding factor?
Intelligent question. The weather, as always. Over the Rockies and the Southwest, it's still storming. And chances he doesn't take. When you've directed every detail, the smallest even as Lindbergh has, you're not leaving San Diego until you're absolutely positive the weakest link in the ship is strong enough to withstand any strain. Ah, here he comes. You better hold on to your hat. He'll come straight down within 5 feet of the ground before he pulls out.
Charles Lindbergh pulled out of that test dive all right. And within a week, it left San Diego to conquer the world by air. What an adventure. But it was no haphazard adventure, as President Coolidge was to say later. After months of most careful preparation, supported by a valiant character, driven by an unconquerable will, this reserve officer set wing across the dangerous stretches of the North Atlantic. Make that Atlantic flight with him in your imagination when I return for Act Two. The General Mills Radio Adventure Theater will return shortly.
Yeah.
50 years ago at Roosevelt Field, New York, all the big boys, the name pilots, Admiral Byrd, Clarence Chamberlain, Bert Acosta, Noel Davis, the war aces, the headliners, all were planning to be the first from New York to Paris. And the betting was high that among them would be the Atlantic conqueror. But suddenly, everybody's looking at the new kid, Lindbergh. Now, surely this 25-year-old in a monoplane, every inch given over to instruments and fuel tanks. Surely he isn't going to go it alone.
Charlie, who's that? We came, BF and I. We couldn't stay away.
Hey, imagine seeing you two at Curtis Field.
You don't think I'd miss this, do you?
Hey, how you doing, BF? Who's minding the store in San Diego?
I may own the Ryan Company, but it doesn't owe me.
Oh, fellas, this is the greatest present you could have brought me. Yourselves. It's a madhouse here in New York. Now, I don't want to complain. It sure has made everyone St. Louis conscious.
Aviation conscious.
Lucky Lindy conscious.
Where this luck business started, I haven't a foggiest idea.
Who's handling the whole story of your flight?
The New York Times.
Mm-hmm.
I signed with them for exclusive stories. They've been out here every day while I'm checking her over.
When are you taking off?
As soon as the fog lifts.
Shall I tell them?
Tell me what?
Your mother's coming. They gave me this message at the gate. She'll be here tomorrow morning.
Think she'll try to dissuade you?
Oh, no, not her. You know, she used to barnstorm with me. Even rode the airmail. Loves flying. Oh, it'll be real nice seeing her.
Well, Like the name, Spirit of St. Louis. They lettered it real nice. It's a cozy cockpit, and that's a nice little wicker chair you're going to sit on.
I figured it's the lightest thing made.
If I wouldn't be excess baggage, I'd come along with you.
And I'd take you, Mom, but I need that 105 pounds of gasoline more.
Oh, Charles, I haven't been 105 pounds since I met your father. Anyway, I'm glad I came and we spent the day together. I feel better now.
Yeah, so do I.
When are you leaving for Paris, son?
Tomorrow morning. Gonna get her all gassed up now.
Now, you be sure you take enough fuel.
Oh, I will. I forgot you know all about this business.
And speaking of fuel, how about your own?
My own?
Food. Food is fuel. What are you taking with you?
Oh, I hadn't thought about that.
Well, you better think about it. You're going to need your strength. I'm going to get you some sandwiches and have Mr. Hall or Mr. Mahoney see you put them in the cockpit. You still like chicken salad? And what about a roast beef medium?
Mom, you ask the only sensible questions I've heard since I got to New York. And bless you.
Bless you too, Charles.
Well, got your water, sandwiches, coffee?
Don't need any coffee. Give her another listen to her, will you? What do you think?
Rev her up again. We'll listen once more. Well, the engine's doing as well as you can expect in this weather.
Well, then, I might as well go.
Longer to get airborne than normally. As soon as everything was cleared, I throttled down to Cape Cod to Nova Scotia for 300 miles. I'm out of sight of land. Motor doing fine. Fuel and oil fine. Wanted the boys back in St. Louis who'd backed me to know I'd made it as far as Nova Scotia. Deviated from planned course so they'd hear a report.
Yarmouth, Nova Scotia. Captain Lindbergh passed over New Tuscan. About 40 miles from here at 11:45 Eastern Daylight Time. He was flying low, but traveling very fast. Spirit of St. Louis sighted over St. John. 6 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, traveling 100 miles per hour.
Just leaving Newfoundland now. Real bad weather starting up. There's a narrow strip of fog coming up on the coast. If it'll only hold off a few hours more, I can check my course over Newfoundland. Won't care what happens after that. Fly by compass.
The plane was flying low and at a great speed. Should Lindbergh get through a dense curtain over the Newfoundland banks, he'll have fair weather across the Atlantic. Ships at sea reporting good visibility with no indications of a storm within the next 24 hours.
Driving storm above and below. So, down and up we go to get out of it. Dive down to 10 feet above the water. Can't shake that sleet. Okay, up. Up now. No use. I can see out there. Sleep clinging to the plane. A flyer's nightmare. Takes very little sleep to force you down.
Ambassador Herrick, any word?
Well, we'll be the last to know here in Paris how Lindbergh's flight is going. But we'll be the first to know he's landed safely.
One man, all those hours alone.
That's what makes me anxious, Taylor. I don't think a man can stay awake 36 hours by himself with nothing but the sea and the sky and the air. And that motor going on and on monotonously. Terrible strain.
Oh, if he could only get 5 minutes sleep. 2 minutes.
But he can't. Not even 40 winks.
Storm's not getting any better. It's getting a lot worse. But now I can't turn back. I've come too far. I've got to ride it out. Icebergs over there. So many of them. How far have I come? 10 hours. Those huge, massive cakes of ice. I might be able to land on one of them if I'm in trouble. But who would ever find me? Look out. Here comes the fog. Try to lift over it. I'd better gain altitude. Who knows how tall these icebergs are? And I can't see them.
The way I figure it, B.F., he's a little more than a quarter of the way. I'm banking on that Earth and Dr. Compass to be a real assist.
Yeah. Well, the boy's uncanny, no matter what instruments he uses.
No matter what the weather conditions are, either. Storm, fog, he keeps right on course.
Fog. Still fog. How far have I come? 18 hours. Halfway there. Here come the clouds. Right through them into the bright blue. Don asked me, did I take coffee? Only got two hands. Even with a stick between my knees, I need one hand to hold the chart on my lap, so with one hand left. How do you open a bottle of coffee?
Steamship President Roosevelt, en route to New York, posted a double lookout, hoping transatlantic plane of Charles A. Lindbergh would be sighted. Captain George Freed, informed by Associated Press, Lindbergh heading for France, altered course of the liner slightly to the north, about 150 miles off coast of Ireland. The weather does not appear favorable. Visibility poor. A light, choppy sea.
I haven't seen a single ship in 2,000 miles. A wall of mist up ahead. In and out of clouds, mist, mile after mile. They kidded me about dead reckoning and blind flying. Flying blind. It's making me sleepy, all that white curling past me. Just got to keep my eyes open. Keep on going. No choice anymore.
Steamship President Roosevelt, add story. Powerful lights were arranged to serve as beacon for the flyer. These can be seen 20 miles.
Fifth hour. So far, so tired, so good. Engine's burned about 300 gallons so far. Not bad. Not bad at all. And there's the sun. How much more? 10? 9? 8 hours? What's that down there? That spot on the water. A boat? A fishing boat. I can't be far from the coast of Europe. Fishing boats don't go out that far. There it is, right below me. Where is everybody? Nobody on deck. Is that land? Is it Ireland? Fly along the coastline and check my chart. Up we go to 2,000 for a map's eye view. Farms are small. Roads windy. Wet. Must have been raining. There.
harbor. That harbor on the chart. I know where I am.
Belfast, Ireland. Lindbergh's plane reported sighted over Dingle Harbor, County Kerry, southwestern Ireland at 5:30 o'clock this afternoon. All eyes in the Kerry towns were turned to the sky. Lindbergh was traveling very rapidly at a height of about 1,000 feet.
Oh, no. Oh, no, don't tell me. Motor failure over England. Worse, over the English Channel. What did I do wrong? Stupid. The big nose tank is dry, of course. Must have been too groggy to keep track.
All right. Switch to the center wing tank. Nose tank closed. Closed throttle. And mixture control.
Cherbourg, France. A monoplane was observed passing over the French Channel by the fishing boat Jamarc. Passage of the machine was signaled from the semaphore stations at Cherbourg and Angelet on the coast of France.
Gets dark here quicker than in New York. There's that big river. Along the Seine we go. Le Bourget Field couldn't be more than 80 miles away now. I hope the American ambassador's at the airport. Somebody who will know who I am. It could happen. Nobody knows I'm even coming. What time is it? 9:30. Boy, these French sure hit the sack early. No lights down there. There's not a light anywhere so far as I can see.
Sometimes in flight, you're quite alone like Lindbergh was now. But other times? Well, only a few days before he left, Commander Byrd, the famous Arctic explorer, offered Lindbergh his own specially gathered weather reports. Although in the eyes of the world, this was a contest between flyers, still among them there's a love of the air we earthlings know nothing about. If the other man can use your help, you bail him out, in the sky or on the land. I'll be back in a moment for the excitement of Act Three. The General Mills Radio Adventure Theater will return shortly. It's possible, flying along the Seine toward Paris, that Lindbergh remembered being asked by a reporter, "What if you came down at sea? What would you do?" To which the flyer had answered, "Well, there are no skyhooks out there and no landing fields. I guess I'd stay in the cockpit." And that's where we find Charles Lindbergh now, still in the cockpit, and Paris, that night, only 50 miles away.
Have they all gone to bed, these Frenchmen? Or, are they eating late by candlelight? Eating? Another triad of sandwich? Well, why not? No, you don't, Charles. Don't you dare. Don't you throw this sandwich wrapper out of the window. That's no way for a guest to treat his host.
Le Bourget, France. Many thousands of people are packed on all the roofs and at all the windows of Le Bourget Airport, awaiting the arrival of Lindbergh. Darkness has fallen. All of Le Bourget searchlights are sweeping the sky, and rockets are being sent up at regular intervals.
May I come in, Mr. Lindbergh?
By all means, Mr. Ambassador. Come in, come in. How do I look?
I'm sure if Mrs. Herrick saw you, she'd say my pajamas look better on you than they do on me.
The top fits fine, Mr. Herrick, but the bottoms are a little short.
Well, you've got gorgeous ankles. You must be tired. It's almost 4 a.m.
Oh, it's 63 hours since I've been to bed last.
Are you sure that's all you want? Glass of milk?
Oh, yes, thanks.
I want you to know that was some fantastic goings-on at the airport. In all my years, I have never seen so many people with one thing on their mind.
I thought that one thing was to kill me.
Oh, no. To welcome you. You're the only one who could have pulled it off. You know, if we'd had one of the major known flyers, believe me, it wouldn't have been the same. But when a practically unknown young man, you, dares to fly the Atlantic alone, by more or less dead reckoning, well, the French just went crazy. They love youth anyway, so I think you'll have done a lot to bring our two peoples together.
It's beginning to dawn on me there's a lot more to this than winning the Ortigue Prize for a first.
Oh, indeed there is. You brought to France the spirit of America in a manner which could never have been brought in a diplomatic pouch. I was going to say, may I call you Charles?
Yes, sir.
That I was quite as distressed as you to see what a mess they'd made of your plane.
As far as I could see, Mr. Ambassador, in the hangar, there's no serious damage.
And your fans certainly pulled a lot of that cloth away. Well, the holes.
Well, only the covering of the fuselage.
Tiny cabin you had there. It's hard to believe one man, especially a tall man, could stay in such a position all those hours.
Well, sir, I've spent most of my last 4 years in many a cramped cockpit.
When we were in the hangar, I was looking in your plane for your parachute. I wonder if someone didn't help themselves to that for a souvenir.
Well, no, I didn't have any.
No parachute?
Well, you see, they weigh 20 pounds, and every pound counted, so I left the chute behind. Now, Mr. Ambassador, don't you go snitching on me to my mother.
Oh, all right, I won't. I was just about to send her a cable to say you're in good hands. I'll send your love. Well, it's been a big day for all of us.
Yeah, I guess I can bed down now and get some shut-eye.
Good. Get good and rested. For I have an idea you're going to need lots of energy for some time to come. The public can be quite insatiable when it comes to their heroes.
Mrs. Lindbergh?
Yes?
I waited till your class was over.
Yes?
My name is Johnson. I'm with the San Diego Press, and they sent me to talk to you here in Detroit. Have you heard from your son?
Yes, I have. I got a telegram from the ambassador in Paris, France, Mr. Herrick. I got it this morning. Would you like to see it?
Oh, I certainly would.
It says, warmest congratulations. Your incomparable son has honored me by becoming my guest. Imagine that. He is in fine condition and sleeping under Uncle Sam's roof. Myron Herrick. You know, we Scandinavians are not a demonstrative people, but I could just go and hug that Mr. Herrick for being so nice to Charles.
Thank you for sharing that cable for Mr. Herrick with me.
I really can't get over that. An important man like the ambassador, too.
Morning, Taylor.
Morning.
Our guest still asleep?
So far as I know, Mr. Ambassador.
I have a few letters from Theodore Roosevelt to several friends of his, which Lindbergh brought with him. I'd like you to see that delivered.
Certainly, sir.
He wrote a nice little note to me. This will introduce to you Charles Lindbergh, who is a real sportsman. He's modest. He won't ask you to do anything for him. If I were you, however, I would insist upon seeing something of him, for I know you will like him. And so on and so on. Kindest regards, Theodore Roosevelt.
There was a story in the London paper about that. Came over in the pouch this morning.
Oh, come in. Good morning, Charles.
Good morning, Mr. Ambassador. Good morning, Mrs. Taylor.
Good morning, sir.
Did you sleep well?
As though I hadn't for a week.
I hope you had a big breakfast.
Oh, I did, thank you. With all the trimmings.
That's good. You'll need it. There's a big day planned for you. As far as I can see, a big week.
I've been worried about the plane, Mr. Ambassador.
You needn't be. The French government has taken all the responsibility for it, and they'll have it in fine shape, don't you worry.
Well, it's only that there's a front wing spar that I wouldn't like to see damaged in any way.
Oh?
Yeah, you see, all the men at Ryan who built the plane signed their names to the front wing spar before the covering fabric was put on, and, well, I'd like their names not to get damaged.
Well, yes, of course. Taylor, get on the phone and make sure about that, will you?
Yes, sir.
Well, now, Charles, let me give you a rundown of today's ceremony. At 11 o'clock, you're due at the Elysee Palace. French President Dumas is giving you the Cross of the Legion of Honor. Taylor, how formal is this?
Just a suit will do, sir.
What suit is he going to wear?
Your son is loaning the captain his blue suit.
Oh, fine. Blue suit, yes. Well, then, back here for an embassy lunch. At 5, you're invited to the Aero Club of France. All aviators. Some even speak English.
Oh, good, good. I'd like to say something about the courage of Nungesser and Cole.
Yes. Tomorrow, a reception by the Chamber of Deputies in the afternoon. Procession through the streets. You'll go from the American Embassy to the Arc de Triomphe. And they'll probably have you light the torch at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier.
Hello? Mother? Mom?
Hello? Hello, Charles?
Mom, you sound so clear, as if you were in the next room.
What's that, Charles?
Never mind. How are you?
I'm fine. Oh,
that's good. Well, here I am.
They've
got me going to receptions and making speeches all day, every day.
Are you eating well?
Oh, yes, Mom. I don't know how long I'll be in Paris. There's London and Brussels and...
What do you say in your speeches?
I just wanted to know how you were, and the ambassador said I could use his telephone.
He's a very nice man, Charles. And will you tell him for me I was very happy to get his telegram, and I hope to meet him someday.
Yeah, I'll tell him, Mom. I will, Mom. Goodbye.
Goodbye. God bless you.
My own mother. Very lucky. I don't think I'll ever live that name down.
Lucky Lindbergh. When he was barnstorming, wing-walking, airmail carrying, people judged this tall young man by what they saw. And so in those days, they called him Slim. But did they really know him? Then when he flew the Atlantic, the first man to do it alone, then they called him Lucky. Did they know him then? Was it luck? The hours, the months, years of training? No. It wasn't that Lindbergh's luck was good, but that his look was good. His look then and his look ahead. For what he saw in the skies over America and indeed the world, and what he foretold 50 years ago, I'll tell you when I return. 3-4. Europe looks at our airmail service with reverence, said Charles Lindbergh 50 years ago. There's nothing like it anywhere abroad, he said. But whereas we have mail lines, they have passenger lines. It's up to us to create and develop passenger lines. What we need is airports in every city. He was right, wasn't he? The future Lindbergh foretold is here now. Where do you suppose is our future? What young man or woman is working on that today?
Our cast included Russell Horton, Ann Patoniak, Court Benson, Nat Poland, and Earl Hammond. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown.
This is Tom Bosley inviting you to return to the General Mills Radio Adventure Theater for another exciting tale you can hear through the magic of radio. The General Mills Radio Adventure Theater is recommended by NEA, the National Education Association.